Hello, this is UU Taw Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. Hip, hip, hooray, the 8-hour day, the potato chips and beer. Go all the way, the 4-hour day, the 4-day week is near. The boss don't care, he gets his share, and a mighty big share, I hear. But who can scoff at another day off and potato chips and beer? We'll tell the Paul we want them all. The bosses are up the creek. Till they obey the no-hour day, we'll just take us a no-day week. Utah Phillips once again on Labor Day. I don't know where you are right now or when you're listening to this. You could be listening to this next year for all I know, or next week. Doesn't matter. It's Labor Day right here where I am, and that's what counts. So we'll have quite an unusual Labor Day picnic down in the park today. There will be the Didgeridoo Ensemble playing Labor favorites on the Didgeridoo. And it'll be the Tofu Dogs and the Near Beer. And, of course, the annual Labor Day speech, which is generally done by some guru who tells you how to avoid labor by starting your own religion. Now, 1882, that was the first Labor Day. It was celebrated in New York City. That was informally. There was no official sanction for that. There never needed to be. It made a law in 1894. Oh, this, by the way, I should mention that this is the anniversary when this exactly this date, this Sunday, when 184 members of the Industrial Workers of the World were thrown in jail all over the country in 1917, one of the first great political purges in this country that sort of created the mold for that type of activity. Big Bill Haywood, Ralph Chaplin, who wrote Solidarity Forever, all of them were thrown in jail, and they tried, as they once again, they tried to break the back of the radical labor movement. Labor Day. There was an editorial in our local paper here, The Union, which I like, and I like the editorial writer a good bit. He was talking about, well, how different Labor Day is, because there aren't any gifts associated with it, like Christmas or Easter. And I thought about that, and I said, well, now look, the gifts of Labor Day. Start with the 8-hour day and talk about mine safety laws. Let's talk about child labor laws. Let's talk about overtime pay, minimum wage to begin with. Talk about safety rules on the job, health care. Social Security, as far as that goes, is one of the fruits of working class struggle. And I mean working class, wage workers, people who work for wages and got a boss. That defines the working class, whether you're a ditch digger or a college professor. Those are the gifts, and those gifts were given to us by people who fought and bled and died, bloody breath it, down in Kentucky, the Ludlow Massacre, the Everett Massacre, the Centralia Massacre, Homestead in Pittsburgh, the Pullman Strike, those things you never hear about in your media, you never read about in your school books. But it's those people that went to the wall and did hard time and got ground into dust and got forgotten that gave us the gifts of Labor Day that I just told you about. And so that's what we celebrate on Labor Day, is the gifts that our elders, way back, patiently and through a lot of struggle, gave us to enjoy today, and that we have to fight every inch of the way to hold on to. Because we got them, no thanks to the boss. These were not benevolent gifts from enlightened management. No, sir, they were fought for, bled for, and died for by people a whole lot like us. Let's listen to my favorite labor song. It's a bunch of rowdies up in Portland gathered around a kitchen and a little tape recorder. It's one of those kitchen recordings I like to play. Maybe had dipped into a little beverage, which is what it sounds like to me, but this is the way it used to sound in the bunkhouses, folks. Let's listen to Rotten Bosses.
Here is a song that reveals General Strike's poetic side. Written by Howard and Jay, it's full of delicate nuances and exquisite sensibilities. It's called Go to Hell, Rotten Bosses.
We join hands
with Joe Hill,
Ralph Chaplin, and Florence Reese. Stand together in this fight for our rights. Hear our song,
hear our
call, equal rights for workers all, and go to hell. Rotten bosses, go to hell. Well, I was alone. So I picked up my telephone.
Who'd you call?
And I called my union hall.
What'd you tell him?
Said I'm tired of this shit. I'm fed up, and you know I've had it. So go to hell, rotten bosses, go to hell.
If at work you feel beat, fight back, get off your seat. Rally
darkness of the abyss, where the stench of sulfur shrivels your soul, where the heat melts your skin and the maggots crawl on in. Go to hell, rotten bosses.
Hey, boss, do you sleep well in your crimson robes while your factories poison the streams by workers' homes? Then their kids play in the water. What if cancer took your own daughter?
Go to hell, rotten bosses. Go to hell. So go down in the pit to the darkness of the abyss.
Well, that's about got the spirit that establishes the tenor of the day, doesn't it? All those are good working people, good union people up there in Portland, you know, just having a good time and venting. I hope you give yourself a chance to vent like that. Venting is good for the arteries, they tell me. It was Alberta Camp, south of Provo, Utah. It's a long time ago. I was putting in time with the Utah Migrant Council. You were trying to develop camp councils that were mobile with the stream. The migrants had been on contract labor has been brought up from Los Colonias del Valle in South Texas. Came into Utah to work sugar beets before heading up to finish off in hops up in Washington State. It was a terrible drought in Utah that year. There was no crop. Well, the contract laborers, you know, they brought the people up anyway, and they were in the migrant housing, which is, you know, run down, dilapidated, no faucets, no toilets that were accessible, and no screens on the windows, so a lot of bugs, but no wages being made, and so the growers were going to evict the migrants from the housing and just send them on the way without any wages, you understand. Well, a lot of the migrants just camped in that housing and refused to go. They became like little prison camps, like the one down at Alberta. Became our job to try to smuggle food and some simple medicines into those camps. With Alberta, what we did was, since almost all of those were owned by LDS people, by Mormon people, We would go to the church, the Mormon ward, on Sunday morning. We'd already found out what all the license plates were on the cars of the farmers, on the cars of those owners of the sugar beet fields. And we would check the parking lots at the LDS ward to make sure all of those license plates were there. And when they were, we'd take our truck with our food and our medicines and run it into the camp, like out there at Alberta, and pass it out as quick as we could, and then get the hell out of there. At that time, I was working real closely with the Joe Hill House, the house for transients and migrants up there in Salt Lake City. There was a young fellow there by the name of the Cajun, Murphy Dowie, but we called him the Cajun. He was from the Dog Leg of Louisiana. And he had just come from Illinois, where he was working in a migrant struggle there against pesticides. Now, we had the same thing in Utah. In fact, same thing everywhere today. And the story that he brought to us was of parathion being sprayed on a tomato field, and a little boy, you know, the whole family would work in the fields, and if somebody was too young to work, might put him on a blanket under a tree with a jug of water and to fetch for himself. Well, when a little kid, Ernesto, who was 2 years old, got up and wandered into one of the fields that was sprayed parathion, and he died. So we were down at the Joe Hill House after coming back from Alberta camp one night, and Murphy Dowie, Cajun, sat down and sang this song that he'd made up. Let's see if I know it. In Roselle, Illinois, the sun shines bright. Rain falls like tears through the warm summer light. The tomatoes grow ripe and juicy red. For touching their leaves, Ernesto is dead. Little Ernesto just turned 2, died in the fields where the warm fruit grew. Only that morning the crops have been sprayed with the deadliest of poisons our experts have made. Parathion is used throughout our land, but touching the skin, it kills a man. A little Ernesto just turned 2, died in the fields where the warm fruit grew. Oh, where was the rest of his family that day, working tomatoes in a field far away? A migrants who came to Lincoln State, paid with pennies, death and hate. A little Ernesto just turned 2, died in the fields where the warm fruit grew. 32 families of Mexicans there, only 2 toilets, what do we care? The fields grow ripe and juicy red. We eat our tomatoes, forget that he's dead. A little Ernesto just turned 2, died in the fields where the warm fruit grew. Little Ernesto, I often wonder what happened to the Cajun. I've asked that question before on Loafer's Glory. Cajun, are you still out there? He got busted from Joe Hill House and sent to Segalville Penitentiary in Texas as a conscientious objector, and that's when I lost track of him. The Lawrence Textile Strike. That occurs to me today. Today is the anniversary of the death of Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, well, she was, as a teenager at the free speech fight in Spokane, Washington in 1910, she was an organizer at the Lawrence Textile Strike when she was in her early 20s. That was the strike that broke the back of the sweatshop system in North America, broke its back. That was a solid strike. There was 74 different languages spoken by immigrant people that were dying at the average age of 26 because of the dust in the weave rooms. The young women were. Elizabeth Gurley Flynn passed away, and this was the date of her passing. She was one of the founders of the American Civil Liberties Union, although in 1940 that two-faced organization threw her out because of her communist ties. She was finally reinstated in 1964, which is when she passed away. Well, I've talked and sung about the Bread and Roses strike so many times. And I've mentioned to you that there was a great organizer of that strike who was on trial for his life. A young woman was killed in that strike by the militia, and three organizers, Giovanniti and Caruso and Joe Ator, were indicted for murder. They put him in the room in the big courthouse for trial inside of a green iron cage, inside of a cage physically in the courtroom, and they sat there while this trial went on. Arturo Giovanniti was a brilliant Italian poet. Over here, he was just another dumb Italian, you know. He was never honored for his poetry, but he wrote a poem while he was sitting in that green iron cage. Now, it's three or four pages long. I'm just going to give you the end of it. He has the books on the shelves talk. He has the walls talk. He has the iron in the cage talk. And then toward the end, he has the district attorney stand up and talk. And then after this, we're going to listen to the Winnipeg Labor Choir sing Bread and Roses to the old tune, which you hardly ever hear anymore. And that man was the most hoary of all, and most bent and worn and crushed was he under the heavy weight of the great burden he bore without pride and without joy. He arose, and addressing himself, I know not whether to the old man that sat on the black throne, or to the old books that were moldering behind him, or to the picture that hung above him, he said, and dreary as the wind that moans through the crosses of an old graveyard was his voice. I will prove to you that these three men in the cage are criminals and murderers, and that they ought to be put to death. Love. It was then that I heard for the first time the creak of the moth that was eating the old painting and the old books, and the worm that was gnawing at the old bench, and it was then that I saw that all the old men around the great greenish room were dead. They were dead like the old men in the old paintings say that they still read the old books, that he could read no more, and still spoke and heard the old words he could speak and hear no more, and still passed the judgment of the dead, which he no more could pass upon the mighty life of the world outside that throbbed and thundered and clamored and roared the wonderful anthem of labor to the fatherly justice of the sun. Tune, you know, I've been singing that song all my life, and people can say to you, not all my life, but a good bit of it, say, where did you get that tune? And the folklorist asked me that, and I say, well, kind of look. In the early 1960s, all I had was a little red songbook of the IWW, and there are no tunes in there. And I wanted these songs to be sung, like We Have Fed You All for a Thousand Years, Bread and Roses. So I simply made up tunes so I'd be able to sing them. And then I've sort of stuck to those tunes ever since. And we'll brook no criticism of that. Damn it, those songs deserve to be sung no matter what the tune is. I had the privilege, several years ago, of taking my son Brendan on a tour with me to New England. And then there in Boston, we walked. There was a tour going on. It was a tour of the Sacco and Vanzetti sites. Now, and we were able to talk about that as we walked, because his grandmother, my mother, was involved in the committee as a college student. She was involved in a committee to defend Sacco and Vanzetti. Two Italian immigrants, a fish peddler and a shoemaker, labor organizers, and anarchist labor organizers, and they really understood what that meant, the idea of self-government, and that self-governing people can come together and make combinations that serve their needs, and not as they're imposed upon them by people who are simply trying to coin their lifeblood into gold. Well, they were framed up on a murder charge. Trial lasted 7 years, and finally they were electrocuted by the state of Massachusetts. We walked through all the stations, I suppose you'd call them, of the life and death of Sacco and Vanzetti. Those are the kind of people that we commemorate on Labor Day. Those are the kind of people we try to remember. Those are the kind of people that must be taught about in our schools, that our children must know about, because they gave so much for us. Sacco was in jail there, going to be executed the next day. He wrote a letter to his little son, Dante. He knew that by the time Dante received the letter, that he would be dead. I'll give you Sacco's last letter, and then Charlie King's marvelous song, taken from the Address to the Court, a song put together by Charlie King. Sacco's last letter. If nothing happens, they will electrocute us right after midnight. Therefore, here I am right with you, with love and open heart. Don't cry, Dante, for many, many tears have been wasted, as your mother's tears have already been wasted for 7 years, and never did any good. So, son, instead of crying, be strong, be brave, so as to be able to comfort your mother. And when you wish to distract her from discouraging soulness, take her for a long walk in the quiet countryside, gathering flowers here and there. And resting under the shade of trees, by the music of the water, the peacefulness of nature, she will enjoy it very much. And surely you will, too. But, son, you must remember, don't use all yourself, but down yourself just one step to help the weak ones at your side. The weaker ones, the persecuted and the victim, they are your friends, friends of yours and mine. They are the comrades who fight, yes, and sometimes fall, just as your father, and Bartolo have fallen, fought and fell yesterday for the conquest of joy and freedom for all. In the struggle of life, you'll find more love, and in the struggle, you will be loved also.
Who will remember the hands so white and fine that touched the finest linen, that poured the finest wine? Who will remember the genteel words they spoke to name the lives of two good men, a nuisance or a joke? And all who know these two good hearts, no, I never had to rob or kill. I can live by my own two hands and live well. And all my life I have struggled to rid the earth of all such crimes. Who will remember Judge Webster Thayer, One hand on the gavel, the other resting on the chair. Who will remember the hateful words he said, speaking to the living in the language of the dead? And all who know these two good arms know I never had to rob or kill. I can live by my own two hands and live well. And all my life I have struggled to rid the earth of all such crimes. Who will remember the hand upon the switch that took the lives of two good men in the service of the rich? Who will remember the one who gave the nod, or the chaplain standing near at hand to invoke the name of God? Scourge shoemaker, we will remember this poor fish peddler. We will remember all the strong arms and hands that never once found justice in the hands that rule this land. And all who knew these two good arms, no, they never had to rob or kill. Each one lived by his own two hands and lived well. And all their lives they had struggled to rid the earth of all such crimes. And all our lives we must struggle to rid the earth of all such crimes.
Well, I know that it's kind of an odd segue to go from Two Strong Arms, Sacco and Vanzetti to the Stone Rag, you know, intermission music with Blind Kenny Hall. But damn it, Kenny Hall has struggled all of his life, you know, blind since birth. And he is a true hero of mine. And his music is endowed with such optimism. And that's what I want in the labor movement. That's what I want as one of the fruits of this titanic struggle that's been going on for hundreds of years. I want a feeling of optimism. I want a feeling of hope. I refuse to live without hope. By the way, the singer on that song, Two Good Arms, is Len Wallace, a singer and accordion player. A member of Canadian Auto Workers Local Number 1, Windsor, Ontario. And now, one of the old stories. You know how they used to tell the stories around the peat fires in Ireland that would sometimes go on for two nights? I don't intend to do that. But they were the stories that bore forward the history and the life of the people. Young immigrant Joel Emanuel Hegeland learned to speak English on the tramp steamers going between Sweden, his native Sweden, and Britain. Traveled with his brother. Before the turn of the century, he immigrated to the United States. Joel Emanuel Hegeland became Joseph Hillstrom, as he shortened his name. Boomed all over the country, working as a machinist, working on the docks in San Pedro. Living the life of a working stiff at that time, without any pension, without any Social Security, no hospitalization, no safety laws, nothing. Joined the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, the Wobblies. There he became Joe Hill, working on the docks down in San Pedro, taking old songs, old hymns, and putting new words to them so that the workers had songs to sing, Preach from the Slave, Power in the Union, The White Slave, wonderful songs that are still commonly sung in Europe at labor union meetings but hardly ever heard in the United States anymore. One of the fruits of the Cold War, folks. Well, Joe Hill was another one of those framed up on a murder charge, Salt Lake City, Utah. He was framed on the murder charge of killing a grocery store owner. Well, Governor Spry, the governor of the state, had vowed to bust the IWW, the organizers, out of the state forever, and this is the way he was going to do it. Two long, crooked trials, 75,000 letters from around the world appealing for a new trial, telegrams from President Woodrow Wilson, from the Swedish ambassador, all to no avail. They were going to kill him. Well, Joe Hill was in jail there. He wrote to Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, who was in charge of raising money for his defense, said, Libba, stop spending money on me. They're going to kill me whether I'm in jail or not. He put that money to work, keeping a fighting union going, keeping the newspaper coming out. He wrote Big Bill Haywood in Chicago, the General Secretary Treasurer of the union, and said, Bill, I don't mourn for me, but organize. Promise me one thing, Bill, that when I'm dead, you'll take my body over the border into Wyoming because I don't want to get caught dead in Utah. Some people say that his last true words, as witnessed by the reporters at the execution, it was a firing squad, say his last words were ready, aim, fire, as he delivered the order for his execution in rage and impatience. And he passed a little piece of paper out to a reporter through the bars, and that was his last will. It said, my will is easy to decide, for there is nothing to divide. My kin don't need to fuss or moan. Moss does not cling to a rolling stone. My body? Ah, if I could choose, I would to ashes it reduce, and let some merry breezes blow them to where some flowers grow. Perhaps some fading flower then might come to life and bloom again. This is my last and final will. Good luck to all of you. Joe Hill. That was November 19th, 1915. Today we have the 50th anniversary of Peekskill. Big rallies, two of them, held in New York State, little town of Peekskill, that were viciously attacked 50 years ago by the American Legion, by people enraged and inflamed by the government, the great anti-communist crusade. Many people were injured very, very badly. Let's listen to a recording from that Peekskill concert of Joe Hill, sung by Paul Robeson.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe, says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses.
they shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find your hill. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he.
Paul Robeson, a glorious voice. Now look, folks, a song about little Ernesto was killed by the Parathion, and Arturo Giovannitti, and Sacco, and Vanzetti, and Joe Hill. They're all songs about people getting killed and getting killed legally. These songs in this program is not about death. These songs are, in fact, about life. They're about your life. What you're doing with your life, what you're doing with what you're selling to get through the world, your labor energy. What are you doing with it? Are you getting back the wealth that you create? Getting anywhere near the share of it that you create? Well, that's what these songs are for, and that's what this struggle is for, is to give you the tools and to give you the inspiration to be able to get together with your workmates and organize to ensure that you get back the greater portion of the wealth that you create. All wealth is created by labor, so all wealth belongs to labor. Instead of just fruitlessly plowing our best years, our best days, our best hours into their money crop. Well, let's listen to that, Malvina Reynolds and the Money Crop. And then let's go right into a woman who did something about it and listen to Faith Petrick sing the Kugelsberg National Bank.
Well, money has its own way. And money has to grow. It grows on human blood and bone, as any child would know. It's iron stuff and paper stuff with no life of its own. And so it takes its growing sap from human blood and bone. And many a child goes hungering because the wage is low, and men die on the battlefield to make the money grow. And those that take the money crop are avid without end. They plant it in the tenements to make it grow again. The little that they leave for us, it cannot be a seed. We spend it on the shoddy clothes and every daily need. We spend it in a minute, in an hour it is gone, to find its way to grow again on human blood and bone.
Up the street, her house is so tidy, her house is so neat, But you'd never guess, though hard you might try, what this little old lady was doing on the sly. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white, but the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank. The Kugelsberg Bank had an audit one day, and I mean to tell you there was all hell to pay. She'd filched all the money in tiny amounts from 143 dormant accounts. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white, but the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank. Children all loved her and grown-ups would vie for a taste of her old-fashioned blueberry pie. No one suspected, not even Hank, she was juggling the books at the Kugelsberg Bank. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white, but the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank. She worked 20 years without a vacation. The president said that was real dedication. Concerning this statement, she remained mute. She simply smiled sweetly and piled up the loot. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white, but the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank. She gave to the church, no thoughts could be higher. Her voice like an angel rang out from the choir. But from her picture window, there glows no more light. She's dining in Rio Janeiro tonight. She's someone's grandmother with hair snowy white, but the FBI's hot on her trail tonight. She's down in Brazil with the janitor Hank and the loot from the Kugelsberg National Bank.
These old songs, these old stories, why tell them? What do they mean? When I went to high school, that's about as far as I got, reading my U.S. history textbook. Well, I got the history of the ruling class. I got the history of the generals and the industrialists and the presidents who didn't get caught. How about you? I got the history of the people who owned the wealth of the country, but none of the history of the people that created it, you know? So when I went out to get my first job, I went out armed with somebody else's class background. They never gave me any tools to understand or to begin to control the condition of my labor. And that was deliberate, wasn't it? Huh? They didn't want me to know this. That's why this stuff isn't taught in the history books. We're not supposed to know it. You understand that? No. If I wanted a true history of where I came from as a member of the working class, I had to go to my elders. Many of them, their best working years before pensions or Social Security, gave their whole lives to the mines, to the wheat harvest, to the logging camps, to the railroad, got nothing for it, just fetched up on the skids, living on short money, mostly drunk all the time. But they led those extraordinary lives that can never be lived again. And in the living of them, they gave me a history that is more profound, more beautiful, more powerful, more passionate, and ultimately more useful than the best damn history book I ever read. I've said so often before, the long memory is the most radical idea in America. Sing a song I made up for one of those. I never met him. There's one flop hotel left in Spokane, Washington called the Clem Hotel. I'd walk through the parking lot there on my way to the park. An old man sitting up there in the window, grimy window, face pale like a mask of death, gazing down at the parking lot, perfectly motionless. I'd make a point of going through there every day, and I'd wave at him. Finally, I got him so to at least lift his hand and wave a little bit. I went to the fellow at the desk in the hotel, and I said, I want to meet that man. He said, he won't let you into his room. He's afraid of the young jack rollers. He's afraid of the young ones on the street that'll knock you down for your little bit of pension money, for your little bit of VA, your food stamps. So he's got a spike ball handle behind the door, and he won't let anybody come in there, but that he'll attack you. Well, I made this song for him anyway. I don't know if it's his whole story. It's not going to be mine. I sure hope it's not going to be yours.
I spent my whole life making somebody rich. I busted my ass for that son of a bitch. And he left me to die like a dog in a ditch. And told me I'm all used up. He used up my labor, he used up my time. He plundered my body and squandered my mind. And gave me a pension of handouts and wine. And told me I'm all used up. My kids are in hock to a god you call work, slaving their lives out for some other jerk. Yeah, my youngest in Frisco just made shipping clerk, and he don't know I'm all used up. The young people reaching for power and gold don't have respect for anything old. For pennies they're bought and for promises sold, someday they'll all be used up. They use up the oil, they use up the trees, they use up the air and they use up the sea. Well, how about you, friend, and how about me? What's left when we're all used up? I'll finish my life in this crummy hotel. It's lousy with bugs and my God, what a smell. But my plumbing still works and I'm clear as a bell. Don't tell me I'm all used up. Outside my window, the world passes by, gives me a handout and spits in my eye. And no one can tell me, 'cause no one knows why. I'm living, but I'm all used up. Sometimes in my dreams, I sit by a tree. My life is a book of how things used to be. And kids gather around and they listen to me. And they don't think I'm all used up. And there's songs and there's laughter and things I can do. And all that I've learned I can give back to you. I'd give my last breath just to make it come true. No, I'm not all used up. They use up the oil and they use up the trees. They use up the air and they use up the sea. Well, how about you, friend, and how about me? What's left when we're all used up?
All used up. Oh, yes. Well, make sure that doesn't happen to you, huh? It sure isn't happening to me because I'm here in community radio station here and I'm with people that I love and like to be with and I'm doing work that doesn't require me to have a boss. I gave up having a boss many, many years ago. Time for us to wind this down here. Probably ought to do Utah's The Old Guy's annual Labor Day address. I'll try to keep it brief, all right? You know, the academics and the economists have tried to define the working class out of existence. You know, there's no more working class, which means there's no more class struggle, which means there's no more class warfare. Well, that's balderdash. That is simply isn't true. If you're working for wages and got a boss, you're in the working class, and that struggle goes on and on to be able to care for your kids, to be able to live any kind of decent human life. The working class. When I turn my faucet, water comes out. When I flush my toilet, the poop goes away. When I go to my mailbox, the mail is sitting there. When I throw the switch, the lights go on. Eh? Work is being done. I can't do any of those things. I don't know how. And I haven't got the time or the skill to learn. Hmm? All of those things. When the garbage truck shows up, the garbage goes away. I would sink in my own filth, my own waste, if somebody didn't do that work. Huh? And we honor that. That's what we do on Labor Day. We honor that. We honor the work of all the people that make our lives livable. You know? All the things that you can't do for yourself have to be done for somebody else. Now, you want to make sure that the people who do that work, essential to your life, the quality of your life, are adequately compensated for that work, better than adequately compensated, that they're well housed, that there's strong safety regulations so they don't get injured or sick on their job. They don't have to worry or fret about a kid having to go to a hospital or a long illness, you see. And when they get too old to do that kind of work anymore, that there's enough money there for them to have a dignified and a delightful retirement. Now, that's a selfish thing, you know. I want those things to be done as well as possible, and they can't be unless the people who do that work are happy, all right? And when I look out my window and see my garbage man come by, I realize that he contributes more to my quality of life than I do to his. Next time a garbage man comes, run out and ask for his autograph, okay? Let's listen to the old Almanac Singers, the first recorded version of Solidarity Forever.
Shall run. There can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes
it is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
Taken untold millions that they never toil to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever.
In our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong.
Thanks for giving me an opportunity to rant to you. I have no rant control, you know. This is Utah Phillips, and you've been listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. And this from Joe Hill. If we, the workers, take a notion, we can stop all speeding trains. Every ship upon the ocean we can tie with mighty chains. Every wheel in the creation, every mine, every mill, fleets and armies of all nations will, at our command, stand still.